Ramble.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome to You Can Sit With Us, all you cutie booties out there.
We're live.
We're live in studio. It feels so real. It feels so wonderful. I'm so happy to see you guys.
I know.
Yeah. We're missing Becky today, but she'll be back. Mm-hmm. Today, we are actually filming/recording this on International Women's Day.
Yeah.
It's a very special day.
Yeah.
As international women.
You know, we're very local women this year, but I would love to be international.
Oh my gosh. I truly wish we were international women. But we thought, what better day to share a very, very special and intimate story that we have been wanting to share for a while. Rachel's cancer story.
Yeah.
I mean, this is something that you've hinted at a little bit. I have heard parts of the story. I think Maggie's heard parts of the story as well, just being friends with you. I think it's a pretty important part of your life. And we are so excited to hear about it and to share it with you.
Yeah, to share it with the people.
To share it with the people.
Well, let me start. Let me paint a picture. Well, how it's all started was... So I was at a friend's house in upstate New York. Mm-hmm. You know how in your mid-20s, you just go to your friend's parents' houses?
Yeah, absolutely.
So my friend's parents had a very nice house with a pool in upstate New York. And I just sort of rolled over and I felt under my arm a lump in my breast. And I just kind of like was like, huh, is that what I think it is?
Uh-huh.
No.
Did it hurt? Did it?
Uh-uh. It was very clear.
It was okay.
It was like I felt it with my arm. I had my boyfriend feel it. And I just like, but it was Saturday and we were in upstate New York and everyone was partying. Just like, okay, well, we'll deal with this later. We'll deal with it the next day.
Yeah.
I actually did this very funny thing, which was the next day was Sunday and we were still there and everyone's like playing beer pong in the backyard or whatever. And I went to the pool and I laid on a float and I like looked up at the trees in Hudson, New York. And I thought like, is this the before and after of my life? Like it was like I was in my own movie, like my own indie movie.
Wow.
Like the drone pans out, the little Wes Anderson float in the pool. And I was like listening to the other, like all of our friends, like, because I didn't tell anyone but my boyfriend. I was listening to like all of our friends like having a good time. I was like, is this it? Like I just had like a dramatic moment. Turns out it was it, but I thought I was just playing into it.
Had you been like hammered into as like a young girl to give yourself like the self breast exams and
I
never
know. We learned how to do that in like middle school sex ed, but I wasn't doing that.
Yeah.
And also for all of you listeners out there, I had very large breasts. I know
teen.
You wouldn't know that now, but they were like huge.
Really?
I had huge boobs.
Yeah.
They were really big. I mean, I wore like a 32 double D.
Wow.
Wow.
Yeah, bra. I had big boobs.
That's that is actually my size.
Wow.
And I don't consider them like, you know, huge, but then when you actually think about like the bra
they're
size.
Pretty big, and like I'm just pretty petite, so they looked really big on me.
Yeah.
I have only known you since after.
Yeah.
And so I would never have guessed.
No.
Never have guessed.
They're big.
That is so funny.
But you're going to notice lumps less easily, right?
Because you have thicker tissue.
Also, at this point, I'm 24.
Right.
So the tissue's really dense and young breasts. But no, I wasn't checking myself.
Yeah. Like, I mean, I was like,
I also
occasionally
wasn't flossing every day, you know?
You know?
Yeah.
I hardly brush my teeth every day, please. I would go to bed drunk and like, and be like, I'll do it tomorrow.
I'll do it tomorrow. I'm going to brush my teeth tomorrow.
And did you have any family history?
A little, but not directly. I have an aunt who had breast cancer and also brain cancer who died really young, a paternal aunt. And I had some like colon cancers in older family members, but it's not like my mom or my sister had it.
Right.
So it's not something that like you were going to the doctor for and they're like, have you been checking?
No.
Yeah.
No. And I barely had, I didn't even have health insurance at this point because I had just stopped being a nanny, or I was actually still a nanny at this time.
Okay.
And then I was about to start teaching school in August. And this was just a few days before my birthday, which is in July. So I was sort of like transitioning. So I go back to the city and I don't know where to go because I'm uninsured. I live in New York City.
Oh my gosh.
I don't have insurance. I'm a nanny and I'm about to be a teacher. And so I go to Planned Parenthood. And I actually saw a woman there who was, she went to the same college I went to. And we were chit-chatting and she was like, oh, it's a, I'm not going to say it right, a fibroadenoma. She was like, it's a fibrous lump. It should go away with your next period.
They say that a lot of the times, like when young girls are, mom, I feel something, they usually say it's just like regular tissue or like development like that. Did you think, was that the first thing that came to your mind when you rolled over at a friend's?
Oh my God, it's cancer.
Yeah.
That's what I thought. But I was like holding that thought at bay.
Yeah.
You know how in like scary situations, you're like, okay, well, it could be that. Or it could be a whole host of shit that I don't know about that's like a lot less scary.
Right, so, right. Like here I am at, you know, at my friend's house. Yes,
I'm 24. I'm
24 is
like,
so
I'm not
going
to stress out about this right now.
Yeah. Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Yeah. Yeah. So they tell you you're fine. What happens next?
So I was like, well, that doesn't seem like enough.
Yeah.
That doesn't seem... That, she just like felt it. I was like, that's not enough.
Yeah.
So I found a clinic up in Harlem or the Bronx called the Ralph Lauren Clinic. This clinic would do a biopsy if you were uninsured, like whatever. And I literally am like standing with my coffee and my cell phone. I'm like talking to my boyfriend. I'm in the Bronx on like a Tuesday morning at 8 a.m. or something. And I witness a car hijacking right in front of me.
Oh,
this van is parked at the stoplight. This guy runs up. He starts banging on the side. Another guy gets into the passenger side. He holds a gun up to this guy. The driver gets out. They take the van and speed off. And I was like, I have to go.
Oh, my God.
I have to go get a biopsy.
That's what they mean when they say car hijacking. Jesus. I thought it was like someone's out at the like a gas station. Like, and
there are people out of their bodegas like sort of looking. And I was like, I have to get inside somewhere.
I'm not safe.
Harlem is very different now. But yes.
Yeah. I think this was actually the Bronx because I eventually end up at Harlem Hospital. But I go, I find the place. I tell them I witnessed a car hijacking. They're like, oh, really? And they do a needle biopsy, which is a fine needle aspiration. Mm-hmm. So they take kind of like a pretty normal sized needle and take a part of it. I wait however long, however many days till the lab comes back. And they say inconclusive.
Inconclusive.
Yeah.
They're like, maybe they didn't get like a good sample or they needed more.
Who knows? So then,
what does that even mean?
Could mean a lot of things.
Inconclusive.
Yeah.
Yeah. But that wasn't.
Not good enough.
That wasn't what I was looking for. Yeah. So then, at this point, it's like, August, basically. I haven't told anyone in my life that I found this.
Okay. What month did you find? And then what?
July.
July, August. Okay.
Because I just don't want to worry everyone.
Right. Yeah.
And I find a clinic in Harlem that sees people for things that diagnose diseases every Thursday. And you go every Thursday and you take a number and you wait like 9 hours and you hope to be seen. And they do all sorts of stuff. And this is for people who are uninsured.
How wow. long did it take you to find these places
that
like accept uninsured people mm-hmm. to, you know, like... They only take people on Thursdays. You're completely out of your neighborhood.
Yeah.
How do you find these places?
I mean, I don't know. I guess I was just looking online. I think my boyfriend was helping me. And I started this new job in August teaching at a new school. And I had to be like, but on Thursdays I have to leave. But he didn't really want to tell them why. Yeah. And they were like, it would literally be like if I hired you today and you're like, but I need Friday off. You'd be like, excuse me.
And as a teacher, that's kind of a hard
right.
Right. Luckily, in August, we were just prepping.
Oh, okay. That's good.
Okay. So I go to this clinic and I wait and they do a mammogram and I wait and they're asking me all kinds of strange questions like, do you smoke cigarettes? I don't. Are you sure you don't smoke cigarettes? No, I really don't. Do you have family history? Sort of. I do this mammogram. I went 1 week, nothing happened. I went another week, I got a mammogram. I went another week and they did a biopsy. And basically I met this radiologist doing the biopsy who took me under her wing. Wow. She like was like, you remind me of my daughter, we're gonna do this biopsy. She also ordered an MRI, we do the MRI. And I go another week to get my results. So we're now like almost into September. I'm doing this every Thursday.
And you basically, you had to have a physician like kind of take you on.
Right.
Being uninsured
instead of just
in
like,
America is so scary.
Instead of just normal care.
Yeah.
Wow.
And so there was this one time I went and my number didn't get called. And so I just went up to the lab in the hospital and I knocked on the door and I was like, do you have my lab results? And this lab technician comes out and he brings me into this room with all these microscopes and he's like, sit down. So do you have family history? Are you a smoker? He's asking me all these things and you can tell he's so nervous. I'm like, can't you just tell me the results of the biopsy? And he's like, visibly sweating. He's a tech. He's not a doctor.
He's not allowed to.
And he like, sit down. And then finally he's like, you really have to talk to your doctor.
Aww. You're like, so my doctor doesn't have time.
My doctor, I'm not getting seen. So finally I start texting this radiologist and on Labor Day weekend, she is like, come in on Saturday morning, bring your boyfriend. And by this point, like, I knew.
Yeah.
Of course.
It's so weird. Like the lab tech almost told me, like, I'm going round and round. It's been 2 months. I've been tracking it down. And finally, they told me, yes, it's cancer. Mm. And actually, the radiologist then drove me in her little convertible sports car back to my apartment after that.
Oh, my gosh.
It was so, like, I got diagnosed was so weird because I just had to, like, find resources.
Right.
And it seems like she was just doing this pro bono and she just really was taken by you.
She would, I think I reminded her of her daughter.
Yeah. I mean, Rachel, you are a very kind person and like, you know, just I can see how this sort of played out in that you really had to work to get the care that you deserved.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but imagine if you had less resources than I did.
Oh, yeah. I know.
Less access to internet, less time to look things up.
Less time to just wait at the...
Yeah, if you had kids or your job wouldn't let you off, there were like...
So many 100
people in that clinic every Thursday.
Yeah. Or if you weren't like an exceptionally nice person, you know, like even if you're not a nice person, you still deserve to be treated
for
medical things.
I have a lot to say about healthcare.
Yeah.
We won't say it all. I mean, I'm sure you do too, but like.
Yeah. I mean, being both in like working and being a patient, like I've had my fair share of experiences where I have to kind of speak up more than I would like to. I'm not telling people to be a pain in the ass, but I'm telling you that everyone should ask questions.
Right.
Everyone. Because when you go home, your healthcare team is not following you home. You are responsible for asking questions and making sure you understand what's going on. And if something doesn't feel right, then I implore you to go seek a second, third, fourth opinion.
Uh-huh. Yeah. So I got diagnosed and I'm still uninsured for like 60 more days at this point until I've reached like 90 days at my job. So I just start doing all of the prep work for surgery and chemotherapy and whatnot for when I will be insured. So that involves going to public hospitals and doing different scans, doing bone scans, mm-hmm. doing full body scans. They're basically looking for additional tumors.
Yeah.
And this becomes important later in the story, maybe. But I did all of this at like public programs and public hospitals.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I still racked up a ton of medical
right.
debt.
Even public health care is not free.
No.
And I had some connections in the city to people who were older and more connected than I was. And we did a lot of research and I picked this big leading oncologist at NYU to be my lead my sort of team. Mm-hmm. And I was paying out of pocket for her just every time I saw her. And I was trying to see her very limited. So I just would pay like $600 every time I saw her.
Unreal.
$600 I did not have.
Yeah. Right. As a
nanny and teacher.
A nanny and a teacher. Yeah.
And I was teaching second grade at this time. And so anyways, I do all of that and we come up with a plan. We're going to do a lumpectomy, a course of chemotherapy and a course of radiation, which is pretty standard.
Mm-hmm. So that's surgery to remove the lump,
mm-hmm.
and then chemotherapy and radiation.
Yeah, and I had actually wanted a bilateral mastectomy to start, which is just to remove everything. And they had said, it's too extreme. They're like, you're overreacting. You're young. You're healthy. It's very contained, we believe. Just remove the lump. It's a much easier surgery. You're going to be back on your feet. You're going to feel more like yourself. For your psychological health, we think you should not do that. Yeah. And so I listened.
And they didn't see any evidence of like it having spread to like the lymph or anything like that.
Well, they did, but not yet. Mm. So the first step up is surgery. So we do a surgery. They do a lumpectomy to remove the lump and the tumor. And as you mentioned, they check your lymph nodes. Mm-hmm. So the lymph nodes under your arms are like the closest thing to your breast where cancer would travel through those to go elsewhere. And my sentinel node, which is like the leader, the mm-hmm. line leader, basically did have cancer cells in it. Mm-hmm. So then they pulled 10 more lymph nodes mm-hmm. and they didn't see any of those in the OR. So they send those off to a lab.
Mm-hmm.
And so then you leave there, you have a drain for a while, you have a little surgical bra. Mm-hmm. The additional nodes had no other cancer, so they believe it was spreading, but it stopped right at that first lymph node.
Mm-hmm.
They thought they got all of the tumor, it was really clean, and eventually you heal from surgery, the drain comes out, and like you're kind of like good to go.
Mm-hmm.
But they're not going to trust that, right? They're going to take out the insurance policy of chemotherapy.
Mm-hmm.
And so the chemotherapy that I did at the time was ACT
mm-hmm.
Plus Herceptin.
Mm-hmm.
So my cancer is HER2 positive, which is like a growth hormone.
I'm actually not familiar.
But it's not estrogen and progesterone positive. So you can get it through those hormones,
right.
But mine was HER2 positive.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like a 2 centimeter and it was like stage 2B. So it's like a big tumor.
That's
and a fairly aggressive cancer. So then they do chemotherapy. They don't do this chemo anymore.
Yeah.
Because it is absolutely brutal and it's not very... The kind of chemo I did is not very sophisticated. It's just like, let's kill everything.
Like brute force.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
It's like, let's wash out your system of all fast-growing cells. And it is unbelievably hard.
Were there other options?
I think my doctor... So I had a couple of oncologists. I had my big sort of oncologist who was more like a research doctor. And then I had my treating oncologist who was the person I was seeing every other week.
Mm-hmm.
And they prescribed this like 4-month dose of chemotherapy. And it was basically, I think they were a little bit scared because I was 24, 25 now at this time.
Yeah.
Okay. Like when you have a 25-year-old patient, you're like, that's a lot of life left to go.
Right. Yeah. Let's get rid of this.
Yeah.
Okay, so they prescribed you the like brute force chemotherapy.
Really tough chemo.
What was that like?
And then, I mean, it was okay. Yeah. It wasn't good.
No, of course it wasn't good.
It wasn't good. It was like psychologically hard to get sicker, mm-hmm. right? Like I was a healthy 25-year-old and then mm-hmm. to like get sicker every week.
Right.
Yeah.
Sucked.
Yeah.
All right.
I know. It did.
Yeah.
Yeah. But what are you going to do? You're right. just going to man up and do it.
Yeah.
You know.
And so what was life like at this point? I mean, you were working, but
I was working, yeah. I was teaching.
Yeah.
But I was like missing a day or two a week.
Yeah. Oh my God.
I can't believe that you were still going to class.
I know, that's unreal.
I know. Who are you?
I don't know.
Superwoman.
Like in between, like not, you're like teaching a lesson. You're like, excuse me, let me just excuse myself to go, you know?
I mean, yeah, but you do all sorts of crazy stuff because yeah. you think you need to. And maybe teaching did help me in some ways, like psychological ways.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like some sense of purpose and normalcy other than like being a cancer patient. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But also, I did crazy things. Like my friends came to visit and I was like so sick from chemo. I couldn't really like get out of bed or mm-hmm. off the sofa. And I was like, but I have to buy Christmas presents for everyone. Can you guys go here and buy this and here and buy this? I like made them shop for Christmas presents for all my friends because I felt like I needed to give them Christmas presents.
You're so cute, Rachel.
But like when I look back, I'm like, What were they doing? Why was I buying Christmas presents for people? No one needs anything. No. What's wrong with me?
It's such a testament to your like optimism yeah. at that time. You're like, this is not something that I'm going to be dealing with forever.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah. Fuck cancer. People are still getting Christmas presents.
Yeah. I know.
You had a party to shave your head.
Oh, I had a party to shave my head, which was so... I mean, I think it's a pretty good idea because it's going to be like a terrible out-of-body experience, whether you do it alone or with a bunch of people. But at least if it's with a bunch of people, you can kind of like distract yourself.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Rachel actually sent us this video before the podcast and Zach and I were watching it. And I was just a puddle of tears. I just watching you just like take control of the situation. Like I know of patients doing that, but just to see you doing it and having a smile on your face.
If you cry, I'm going to cry. Okay. Okay. We're just sitting on the cry couch here.
Just a puddle over here. But like, what was that like? It was very early on in your treatment.
It was early on. It was only a couple weeks in, but I noticed my part was getting like bigger. Yeah. It wasn't falling out in chunks, but like my part got wider and wider. So I was like, we gotta shave it before it just looks terrible. But we made this grave mistake. So I shaved it. My friend Luke shaved it. For Try Guys fans out there, Luke is the guy who came and did the old age suits from MIT because he's an MIT writer. And he's been my friend for the last like 20 years.
Wow.
And he shaved his head. And the mistake we made was the next day we all went to see Harry Potter. And Luke and I are sitting in the theater and we're watching. And we're like, oh, do we look like Voldemort?
No!
We look just like Voldemort. What were we thinking?
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, it was a weird. And then, of course, whenever you walk outside, you're like, oh, everyone knows I'm a cancer patient. They don't because people shave their heads for whatever reason.
Right. Yeah.
But you think that.
Yeah.
Right.
You're like, I remember getting in a cab to go to school the Monday after I shaved my head, and the guy was talking to me, and I was like, he knows. He must know. I was wearing a hat. How would he know?
Yeah.
And what would he care? Yeah. I mean, you know, other than on a basic human level, how would he know?
No, right. It's like all in your own head.
I know.
It becomes such a part of your like being at that point.
Yeah.
That you know, especially when it's so obvious to you
mm-hmm.
and you're like walking around and you're
you
like,
can't think about anything else.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But people are mostly thinking about themselves.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is a good thing when you want to be like a little more anonymous.
Right. Yeah. Wow. So four
months of chemo and then 30 treatments of radiation, which is only like a month because it's every day. Mm. And I think that's pretty standard.
Yeah. Actually, when I first became HEMOC certified, I was shocked to learn that a lot of the times with pediatric leukemia and lymphomas, they'll be treated for 3 years. And a lot of the kids that we see are barely even three sometimes. So that's like they just got most to this world.
Life. And
you kind of build the relationship with these families and stuff. And having to talk about another thing that I was shocked to hear was when I first became working in that field was a lot of the times if you have like a 16 or like 11-year-old boy, you have to talk to them about family planning and sperm banking.
Of course.
Yeah. Just because of some of the chemotherapeutics that they use can make them infertile.
I mean, this is what happened to
you. Well, they wanted to start my chemo on a certain cycle.
Mm-hmm. Did they talk? Yeah.
They were like, well, do you or do you not want to freeze your eggs? And at that point, it was out of pocket.
Oh, wow. And had you even considered this at this point? You were like, you know, I know that children are a huge part of your life. You're a nanny, you're a teacher.
Yeah.
And you knew that you wanted kids.
I knew that I wanted kids. And basically, they were like, okay, you can have one more period cycle before we start chemo. And on that cycle, you can freeze your eggs if you want, but it's going to be $16,000 out of pocket.
On top of everything else,
plus
that you're
an
going
additional
through.
Like $3,000 per year to store them. I'm 25. Yeah. I've been a nanny. I don't have $16,000, and I don't like my parents don't have $16,000. I just paid like $5,000 out of pocket for the genetic testing to figure out if I was BRCA positive or negative. Uh-huh. That's also out of pocket. I'm BRCA negative and P53 negative. So I don't have the genetic mutations. But I was like, I can't do this. And so sweet, my college guy friends got together and they each donated like $500 into a pool of money. For my eggs. And I was like,
stop.
These are 25-year-old boys and they are all working like as assistants at a marine biology center, as teaching assistant. Like none of us have money.
No. So people just came out of the woodwork.
They did, but I sent all the money back because I eventually, so as fate and your body would have it, happy International Women's Day. My period started very early because I was so stressed.
Yes.
Yeah. And they were like, you have to freeze them now on this cycle. We're not going to wait a whole nother month to start chemo. And I just panicked. I like sat comatose on a sofa for like 3 days.
That's a lot of information to process. Yeah. Like,
I was like, I don't have the money. I don't know what to do. Also, they pump you full of hormones to pull your eggs. And my oncologist was like, I don't really want you doing it, but I want kids. Mm-hmm. Kids are important to me. And I just sat there staring, and I had been nannying Nico for 2 years, and he is the most darling child. Now he's 14, so he's very big, but he was so important to me at that time that I eventually came to the conclusion that my love for Nico proved that I could adopt. Like, he was so my own. Yeah. I, in fact, often would comment like, oh, he got that from me because he would behave like me. I was just his nanny. He was so important to me. And is that I was like, okay, I'll just adopt if I have to.
Yeah.
And I ended up not freezing them. But that's a whole nother stressor of like having cancer as a
And you knew wanted kids. Like, can you imagine having this conversation and not have ever thought about that?
With an 11-year-old boy?
Yeah, or like a 16-year-old boy. You know, it's a lot. Or a girl. Or, you know.
Right.
It's a lot.
It is a lot. A lot to consider. And I did lose my period during chemo.
Yeah.
And encountered like early menopause, like hot flashes and stuff.
Really?
Right. Yeah. Right. Like your body basically went through a like a menopausal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The Try Guys at one point were like, let's do Try Guys Try Menopause. I was like, no. It's not funny.
It's not.
The title is funny, but like what will make you do? It's not like labor, like where we can make you like experience some pain.
You're just sitting on a couch and like
you're just like
watching my mom go through that. Yeah. Oh no. Wow. She was a little mess.
Really?
Yeah.
She was a little mess.
My mom calls them the vapors.
The vapors. Your mom is sort of Southern at heart.
She absolutely
the vapors.
The vapors. The other day, she was sort of sitting on the couch and she was like taking off her shirt. She was like, oh God, I can't tell if I'm getting the vapors or if I'm just warm. Could be both.
Isn't that what the vapors are? So, okay. So I do the radiation. We do the damn thing. Mm-hmm. I do a year of Herceptin. I had a Metaport put in. I have the Metaport taken out.
Yeah.
What is that?
A Metaport is when they basically put like a permanent line. And just because when you're getting chemotherapeutics, they're very, not all of them can go through the vein. And if they were to dislodge and go into your skin tissue there,
you could kill it.
It could become necrotic. Like it could be, you could get a burn.
So it's basically like a PICC line that goes straight to wherever.
And like into your arteries. And I couldn't ever have chemo in my, and I PICC. Still don't get stuck in my right arm because of my lymph node removal.
Yeah.
And so I can only do the left arm and I have teeny tiny veins. Yeah. I did two chemos without it and I could feel it traveling. I could feel it burning its way up and into my veins. And they were like, that's not good.
And it has to be internalized usually for cancer patients, oncology patients, because they are, when you get chemotherapy, your white blood cell counts drop, which means like if you were to have an externalized any sort of central line, that it's more risk for an infection. Whereas when you're getting chemotherapy, it's just accessed. Mm-hmm. And then when you're finished, you take it out and you can swim, you can take a bath.
Felt like a hard thing under my skin and they would still puncture the skin to do a blood draw or give me chemo or whatever, but it would click into something right under it.
Yep.
Interesting.
It's like a little button.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
I highly recommend it. I really do.
Yeah.
I think you're like, oh, I don't want to put something in my body that makes me more of a cancer patient. Yeah. But it really solves things.
Yeah. And like you can hide it. Like you can still swim and stuff. Some people
I don't even see the scar. Like I was just thinking about this and recounting that I wore a wedding dress that showed it. Because,
really?
Yeah. Because I don't see it.
Yeah.
It doesn't occur to me
on certain people depending on where they place it. Some people's are really like it looks a little.
You can see mine.
Oh yeah,
but I just it doesn't bother me.
No,
that's such a testament to
how
strong you are. That like you're like this is a scar that I have from this experience this is me.
Yeah,
it is. I don't know. I don't look in the mirror and think, oh, that fucking scar.
Yeah.
I think a lot of other unkind things about my body, but it's not that. But it's more like, I stopped moving during quarantine and that did not do great things for me.
Whoops. But like, it just proves that you are no longer a cancer patient.
Right. Yeah. So I had it taken out. And so then my oncologist ordered a mammogram. We did them. They came back clean. And I was like, I want an MRI.
Yeah.
I'm 26 at this point now. Mm-hmm. Mammograms have never, they were not designed for 20-year-olds. Yeah. I have these giant boobs and I would feel better with an MRI. You were trying to kill cancer cells that may have traveled. I want an MRI. And she told me no. She told me no something like 6 times. And then the oncologist under her also told me no. So I went to my surgeon's office. And I cried like a baby. I threw over a chair. I walked into her office and I threw down this chair and I was sobbing. And I was like, I want a scan. Mm-hmm. And my surgeon very politely explained to me that insurance wouldn't approve it. And I was like, I don't give a fuck. And honestly, I had no thought that they would find cancer. I just thought a mammogram was shoddy work.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so I like threw down this chair and I slammed her door and I acted like a child. And she was like, okay, I'm going to order it for your psychological health.
Okay.
Okay.
Whatever it takes.
Yeah, whatever. So they order it. I do it. They call me at school one day. They're like, we found this tiny thing. This is why we don't order MRIs. It picks up every little thing. And now you're going to go into a tailspin, but don't do it. It's going to be fine. Come in and get a biopsy.
Oh. But also just the fact that you understood what was happening with your body so completely that you were the one who had to say, you know, you found this before. This like mammograms were not enough previously. Give me the MRI.
Yeah. And that finally someone listened to me. Of course, they biopsy it and it's cancer.
Oh, God.
And is it new cancer that grew during treatment? Is it cancer that survived the chemo and radiation? It's in the same breast,
right,
in a slightly different location. Is it cancer that they missed on all of their scans?
Right.
Because I was in these public hospitals that were overwhelmed going to clinics.
Mm-hmm.
They missed it. It grew. It survived. No one knows. It was much smaller than the first, so it wasn't palpable.
Mm-hmm.
But there it was.
Mm-hmm.
And at this point, I have less options,
mm-hmm,
because at this point, I've done a lifetime dose of radiation,
mm-hmm,
a lifetime dose of ACT, and I'm just like stuck.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. What do you?
And
what
I'm
you
so mad at them.
Yeah, because like what your fear was in getting the MRI has proved that you were correct. And this is like one
right.
of those situations.
And I don't even think I thought that was going to happen. Yeah. I just knew that a mammogram wasn't made for me.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, from the beginning, you were outside of the normal bounds of,
yeah,
of a cancer treatment. You know,
yeah,
you're young, and everybody
and
is saying,
and BRCA negative, and yeah, they don't know what to do.
Yeah. You've just had, like, at this point, you've had to advocate for yourself almost constantly, like from getting a diagnosis to getting treated, to following up.
And my big oncologist, like the head oncologist, said the shittiest thing to me anyone could say. She called me after it was positive, and she was like, well, you know, catching it now versus catching it on a scan later doesn't really affect your survivability.
What?
What?
I never saw her again after that. But wow. She was like, the numbers don't change. We would have done a scan in 6 months, and it doesn't actually change. And I was like, excuse me.
Is that her trying to make herself feel
yeah,
better?
Is that yeah. just her saying I was right?
Yeah. Wow. That's her saying I was right and the data doesn't change. But I at this point, my college boyfriend has plans to go to graduate school in a different state. I had was thinking about quitting my job and my hard-earned health insurance. I was going to move. I'm a person who has a life.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
That she wasn't taking into consideration at all.
Mm-hmm.
I broke up with her on that phone call and was like, I will not be seeing you again.
Yeah.
Right. Good for you. Also, you know, just I find it difficult to have confrontational conversations with anybody. And here you are having one of the most difficult conversations of probably your life and standing up for yourself and saying you cannot speak to me like that.
No.
I will not accept that kind of treatment from my care provider.
Yeah. And she didn't take tons of patients because she was head of the department, rock star oncologist. Maybe she had been working with numbers and not people for too long. And she gave a lot of talks and stuff. And I think she's very intelligent, but I was just oh no.
Yeah.
We're done. Oh no.
Yeah. I'm a human being.
Yeah.
And you need to treat me as one.
Yeah. I don't care about your ego.
No, but it's so crazy how much you have to just stand up for yourself in the clinic setting, in the free setting, in the I'm paying hand and foot setting, in the private setting, mm-hmm, all the time. You're the keeper of your health.
Yep.
It's just you. No one else lives in your body but you.
Right.
Yeah.
All right.
I know. And so then we did round two.
and round two, I mean, this must have been completely different.
Yes. So now I get to have the bilateral mastectomy. The thing I wanted from the start where we're back at.
Yeah.
So that's removing both breasts, all the tissue, the whole nine yards.
Did you ever consider not doing that?
No. Okay. Here's the thing. Actually, I did. In the very first conversation with my surgeon, when she gave me the news of the biopsy, I was like, I want another lumpectomy. And she was like, we can't.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
We've radiated this breast. It's not going to hold up. The tissue's not going to hold up. Once we do surgery on it, it's going to fall apart. It's it's not sustainable. You don't have an option.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
She's like, we don't have to take both breasts, but why would you do this big surgery and not take both?
Mm-hmm.
And I briefly asked someone if I could still breastfeed out of one boob.
Aww.
And they were like, no, girl.
No.
That's not really how it works.
Yeah. Oh, gosh.
So we did a bilateral mastectomy where we take both boobs. And at first I was like, I don't want boobs, just no implants, just flat.
Yeah.
And my very sweet surgeon, who was this really cute Korean woman who wore all of these emeralds and diamonds all over her hands and ears into surgery all the time. She was the most bedazzled person I had ever met. Uh-huh. She's very fancy. So I had two surgeons for that, like my breast surgeon and then my plastic surgeon. Uh-huh. She was like, nothing's gonna fit. You'll never wear a swimsuit made for women again. You're never gonna put on an evening gown or a day dress. Like, nothing's gonna fit you. Are you sure you want to like go flat chested?
Yeah.
She's like, I think you're gonna just think about your surgery all the time. Mm-hmm. And I was like, okay, fair enough. How small can we go? And she's like, okay, I'll go as small as possible. I'll leave your nipples in like a normal place so you look normal.
What?
Well,
I hope you would.
They take your nipples a lot of times. They take your nipples, but they're like, you're really young. You want to save your nipples. We'll leave them in a normal place. But so if you have really big boobs and you want to go really tiny, your nipples would then move to a really tiny. They would like move too far. They go really far down or up.
Okay.
And so she was like, we'll give you as small of a chest as we can while leaving your nipples in a normal place. And I was like, okay, that sounds good. And I think it was good advice.
Compromise.
I think it was good advice because it was like, I looked as much like a regular human being afterward as possible. I didn't. And I appreciate that now years later.
Yeah.
Right.
And honestly, to be frank, they look very good. Everyone's very impressed. When I was in the hospital giving birth, the nurse came up to me and she was like, I heard you were a cancer patient and your boobs are fake. Is that true? And I was like, yes. And she was like, my colleague just got diagnosed with breast cancer and she has to come see. I told her they're the best ones I've ever seen. And I was like, bring her in.
You're like, thank you. Yes, please. Oh
my they're God. Very, you don't, the scars are underneath. I have a lumpectomy scar here, but the scars are underneath. Uh-huh. And the nipples are regular and they look really real. And I don't even have to wear a bra.
Wow. Like that. Love it.
They're pretty good. Yeah. They're very convincing. Yeah. Honestly.
So you got a complete mastectomy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I got a complete mastectomy. They do a thing where they just put space savers in at first. So they remove all the tissue. They put like a little balloon in there, basically.
Just to hold.
And this is so weird. This is so sci-fi. It's like deflated when you first get out of surgery. And I had three drains. So drains coming out of your body. So your body learns to process all the fluids again. The drains come out. And then you go in and they pump up the space savers. Mm-hmm. My college boyfriend watched it and he was like, whoa, that's cool. I was like, it's wild. And they like increase the space that like your muscles can handle a little bit at a time over the course of the summer.
Interesting.
And they don't do a reconstruction surgery where they give you your silicone implants until after chemo's done because you're so vulnerable during chemo.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
So I had to do chemo again. I know. And this time they didn't know what to do.
Yeah.
Like I'm really young. I did the really intense chemo. No one knows what to do. So my people at NYU outlined a course of like pretty experimental chemotherapy. And I took that information. I went up to Dana-Farber in Boston and got a second opinion from their head of like oncology. Mm-hmm. And they like gave their notes and like then I took that information, came back down to New York to NYU, and between the two, we negotiated like a pretty experimental course of like 4 to 6 drugs.
Wow.
I am still just floored by how involved you are in
your care.
In your care.
Thank God teachers have summers off because I needed the time to do this chemo and like figure it out. Yeah. No one... I think we think our doctors will be like, oh, here's what you should do and here's how you should do it. And let me know how you're feeling because I'm going to take care of you. But doctors have 65 of you or whatever.
Yeah.
Like, and so you have to do it. Yeah. And doctors are humans.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Doctors have, you know, lives of their own. They could be, they could have just gotten off a phone call with one of their kids and now they're, you know, here they are talking to you, but they're thinking about something completely different or.
Yeah.
And I really think, other than the person I dumped, I really think my doctors cared for me deeply, but I also needed other people's opinions, you know?
For sure.
Mm-hmm. You had to be there for yourself.
Yeah. And your experience is so unique to something someone else will go through and like getting all the information is only empowering to you. So getting a second opinion,
yeah,
and formulating your plan from there.
I did this really smart thing that I would highly recommend anyone listening who is starting out on any kind of medical journey do, which is that I had a Moleskine notebook. I don't know if anyone like you does this. And I always brought someone to an appointment with me. One of my friends, all of my friends were very young. We had not important jobs. We had no money. And they would literally drop everything to take the bus from Boston down to come to a very normal appointment with me so that I didn't have to go alone. My best friend Shady came down from Boston just to go to an MRI with me, and I'll never forget it. I got out of the MRI. I'm crying for no reason at all. MRIs don't hurt. They're totally fine.
I know, but they're a little scary. They're loud. Yeah. And
but you're in like scared.
A cave, you know?
Yeah, you're just a scared person in life, right? Yeah. Like, you're like, really, oh, I have cancer in my body. I'm really scared. And came out, and she's holding two individual bags of Doritos from the vending machine. And I was like, I love you. Thank you.
Blue and red.
Blue and red.
Of course.
Okay. But I, at every appointment, I had someone with me every single time, and I had them write down in this one notebook everything the doctors were saying, every drug, the course, like what sort of time frame. And I had them write it down, because when you're receiving all of this information as the patient, it's washing over you and you are kind of blacking out because you're so overcome with like emotion that you can't focus on it and you can't remember. And also you have like chemo fog on your brain. So you don't, you're not thinking straight. And we taped every doctor's card in there and every nurse's card in there. I still have this book, but so that I knew, so I had written down what the drugs were, what the side effects were, who was administering them, their cards, their fax numbers, everything in one location, not on a phone, in a physical notebook.
Yeah.
Highly recommend.
That's very smart. Because then you can go, because there's definitely that like,
and if you have
amnesia
questions.
You know, from being in a, I even get that from just like going to a doctor's appointment and I think they said something that they didn't actually say.
Yeah.
Like Ned and I will be like, no, actually they said we could start feeding them in, you know, we could start sleep training at 6 months. And I was like, no, they definitely said 4 months. You know, you never.
Yeah. And with, so I always brought someone with me. I would hand them the pen and the notebook and they would write.
They'd be your medical scribe.
Yes, exactly. You need a medical scribe. Then I did this experimental chemo, and it was crazy. I fully believe I was allergic to two of the drugs.
Really?
Yeah. I just kept landing in the ER over and over again for weeks at a time with like a fever of like 105, 106, a heart rate of like 130. I was like turning beet red, and I just thought I was, they would do spinal taps. They thought I had like contracted infections through my metaport, or like maybe I had gotten bitten by, like, I had gone out to Fire Island at one point, and maybe I had gotten bitten by something. I had Lyme disease, or got, an infection, because my heart rate and my temperature were just so high for no explainable reason.
Yeah.
But I fully think I was just allergic to several of the drugs. So we were, like, messing with the chemo cocktail all summer long.
Yeah. You have gone through many lifetimes at this point. So many lifetimes.
Yeah.
Just it, like, nuts. In terms of the experience that you had as a 20-something.
Right.
I mean, my
the 20s were wild.
Yes. You're just beginning.
How they were wild for
that was
most
just
of
a
you.
Start. You
I know. I was like an old woman in my 20s. But so I did it. It was hard. It was not a good time. It wasn't as hard as the ACT in some ways. But it was not easy, and we were constantly tweaking it. And basically, it's hard to look at your doctors and have them be like, "That this is what we think would be best, but there is no protocol for this.
Because it's like a made-up protocol, and it's experimental at this point. Yeah, that's hard.
It is. It's hard. I think it's really hard when there aren't easy medical answers.
They can try and standardize as much as possible, but some things you kind of have to.
And lots of people have like ongoing chronic things that don't have names.
Yeah.
That is so shocking to me. Not cancer, but like I had friends simultaneously to me go through things that are like a variation of like Crohn's disease, or maybe they had a parasite, but they had ongoing chronic conditions that really just didn't have a name or an answer or a treatment plan, obviously. Right. And I found that to be so hard for people.
Yeah.
Wow. And so when did you come out the other side?
And then what next?
What, you know, what like?
What was follow-up like? What was?
Yeah. So ended that, did the reconstruction surgery, and then basically after that, I see an oncologist every 6 months, get scans every couple years, and see a surgeon once a year, and that is that. I did a year of Herceptin after that, which is the antibody therapy, so I kept my port for that until it was done, and then I had it removed. And I am due now to enter some new clinical trials, which are basically just genetic paneling on myself to look at different things. I've done it a couple of times since then. This has been 10 years, going on 11 years since I was first diagnosed. And they've never found a genetic link. But every few years, my surgeon, my oncologist here in LA pop up and are like, hey, would you like to do another genetic panel? And I always say yes, because it's just survey and blood work.
Right. And I just realized that many of the doctors that you were talking about, correct me if I'm wrong, were female.
Almost all my doctors were female. I actually do have a male oncologist here in LA, and I like him a lot. He's never been my treating oncologist, but I was very clear that my whole team in New York when I was being treated be female, and they were.
Really? Why? Was that just something that you felt strongly about that you wanted to be?
And it was easy. But like, I just sort of felt like men can get breast cancer and they can do it, but women mostly get breast cancer. Yeah. And I just felt strongly that I wanted
to be in a community of people.
Women. Yeah. And of women whose mothers, whose sisters, whose aunts, whose, you know, have had it.
Yeah.
I think there's a difference.
Yeah. And there's certain things you like don't have to explain.
Right.
You know?
Mm. Yeah. And cancer is such an emotional situation that like, you know, having a surgeon who would be like, no, I actually think that you will want this later.
Yeah.
You know, like.
Yeah. And I'm sure there are many excellent male oncologist out there. I have one here in Los Angeles who I really like a lot. And actually, I'll say this. The first time I met with him, my oncologist here in LA, who just monitors me, you know, and orders scans. He's never treated me. But he and I sat down for the first time for me to sort of go through all of this with him. I had gotten all my records for him when I moved here. And he goes, do you know what would happen if you got cancer again? And of course, I was like, no. You know, I was like on the brink of tears immediately. And he goes, okay, well, I do. And it's not anything you've done before, because what you did, we don't give to people anymore. Mm. Like, we've moved beyond that. That was fairly unsophisticated, albeit effective medicine. Mm. What we would do now would be much easier. And we could treat you through being pregnant. We could treat you through having young children. So don't worry. I know what we would do. Mm-hmm. And I was like, okay, I love you.
Wow.
I love him. He's at UCLA. I was like, okay, I feel better.
That is excellent care.
It is. That's it's really great. Excellent care. So, I mean, I'm not planning on anything, but I don't need to switch him to a female because he's a very excellent doctor.
I mean, just the fact that he took something that you weren't even thinking about.
And that's like everyone's greatest fear.
Yeah. Is getting it again.
Yeah. I don't think I've ever told anyone this. But during my first round of chemo, I sat down with my best friend, Shady, and I told her out loud, I was like, if I get it again, I'm not going to treat it. Wow. Of course, I did get it again and I did treat it, but I was just so down.
When you're
down,
going through the first cycle of it and that intense of it, like,
you're just like, okay, well, if my body wants to kill me, then my body can kill me because I can't do this again.
Yeah.
And I told her that, but I obviously did not mean it. But like, your greatest fear is that it'll happen again.
Absolutely. And at the time you meant it. You know, at the time you were going through this feeling that like, this is happening to me right now and I can't
do anything
about it.
It's so out of my control.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It sucks to feel out of control in your life.
Absolutely. Yeah. And, you know, in addition to like truly physically feeling awful.
But I think the way I moved on, and maybe you see this with patients, is I totally switched up my life post-cancer. Mm-hmm. I like stopped dating my boyfriend of a very long time. I moved to LA and started working in a different industry. I stopped teaching. I kept all of my dearest, most darling friends, obviously.
Yeah.
But like, I completely blew up my life in a big way and was like, all the stuff I was doing during treatment, I'm never doing again.
Yeah.
And that was a choice.
Yeah.
You were like, I need a change. I need things to be different.
I did a couple things in the meantime. Like, I wrote for a year in Seattle for this company in Brooklyn, and I taught a little bit, but then like at some point I was like, I'm going to work in the film industry. I'm going to move to LA. I'm going to be on my own for a while. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to go see a doctor for a few years. I'm just going to like live, and I'm going to live very differently. And I think I just needed like a second wind, basically.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Just because, I mean, going through that, I'm sure that you realize how precious life is, and like, I'm going to live life. I'm going to live my best life, you know?
Yeah.
And just like,
and giving yourself something to look forward to is huge.
And I just think starting in an industry and in a city where people didn't know that I was a cancer patient was the very first film set I ever worked on was a film starring Keira Knightley called Laggies in Seattle. And I was so fresh out of treatment that I had just had my metaport removed like the week before, and it was super red. And someone was like, oh my God, did you get stabbed? And I was like, oh no, I just hurt myself. And I just didn't tell anyone. Like, I didn't tell anyone for a long time, because I just wanted to live a life where, like, I wasn't a cancer patient.
Mm-hmm. And was that, did that feel like a relief? Did it feel like?
I just think, yeah, it felt good.
Yeah. And was it, were you able to not think about it?
Yeah, I think so.
You were able to say, like, this is who I am now. I am past this situation.
I don't think at first, but I think eventually, like, time just goes on and you just are,
it feels more earned.
Yeah, you're just living your life, and at some point it hits you and you sit back and you're like, oh yeah, right, I went through this really hard thing, let me think about it for a minute, let me sit in the shallow waters of like, wow, that was difficult, okay, let me get out and like go do my job,
yeah,
or have my friends, or like party hard or whatever.
Yeah.
You know,
not everybody can sit in those shallow waters and be in that, you know, that really difficult space and then just walk out of it. You know, that is something that I think is unique and, kind of a testament to your strength again, that you are able to go back and experience that and be a witness to your, to this part of your life.
Like, once a year, my friends made me this lovely little book, where they all wrote letters and included photos and stuff. So like once a year, I'll like look through that book, reread through like the newsletter that like my boyfriend put out at the time to all of our friends, and just kind of like relive it, honor it, and then kind of move on.
Yeah.
Are you still friends with everyone?
With your boyfriend?
Yes. He, not like good friends, because you know, but we are still friends. He's married. He had a baby right before the girls were born, and they're due with a second very soon.
Aww.
And his wife is lovely. All of our friends are mutual. So I used to see him and his wife, like once or twice a year at weddings.
Yeah.
Aww. We're mostly beyond that now in my friend group. It's all babies now.
I mean, and speaking of babies.
Speaking of babies. And now we have babies.
And now we have babies. But that was not easy for you either.
No. And it's probably due to going into menopause twice.
Yeah.
Right? Like, no one knows, though. It's just called unexplained infertility. But, like, I went into menopause with both chemos, and I got my period on the other side of both chemos. Mm-hmm. But chemo will normally
take away.
Yeah. It sends most women into permanent menopause early, because most women who are going through chemo for breast cancer are older. They're in their 30s, 40s, 50s. So if they're not already in menopause, it makes them permanent.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so now I have babies. And here's the thing about having babies and infertility and all of that. Once you get the babies you have, you never want any others. And I'm sure they would have been great, but I don't want those frozen eggs from when I was 25 because they would not be June and Poppy, right? Yeah, like, once you get the kids you have, you can't foresee it happening any other way, because they would be different kids.
For sure.
So I'm glad I didn't freeze my eggs. However, I think that should be subsidized and people should be able to without any cost to them. So if you're going through that, that's certainly a viable consideration.
Yeah.
But I will say, my college boyfriend was kind of the best person to be with me during that time, because not only was he like interested in the science of what was happening to me and like a student of this experience we were living, but he never fell too deep into a pity party. Mm-hmm. Like, I remember one time sitting in this hospital having to like drink this terrible drink for them to be able to like scan my whatever, because like,
yeah,
I don't know, I was doing some sort of fancy CAT scan or whatever. Yeah. And an emergency came in, someone had a gunshot wound or something. I don't know. Someone had something coming in and they had to scan them before me, and suddenly the drink would be outdated. I had to drink it again. Ugh. I was like gagging every time, and I just started to cry. And he looks at me, he's like, come on, buck up, Cole. And I was like,
back up.
Okay, no sympathy for the cancer patient drinking this terrible drink and wanting to vomit. Like, I needed him to just be like, yeah, get it together. Come on, you got this. Yeah. And that was his attitude. So I think that was really good. And I just think, what helps most is letting people vocalize their deepest fears.
Oh, yeah.
So like saying like, I wouldn't fight it again, even though I did and I would. Mm-hmm. Letting them talk about that, and also then being able to treat them as a strong, competent human being who has a life on the other side of it. Buck mm-hmm. up.
Buck up.
Also, let's plan a trip to Hawaii. Yeah. Also, let's yeah. talk about next Christmas. Also, like, let's plan our lives for after this. And you can tell me anything anytime, too.
Yeah.
You know, like the duality of yeah. that.
There's so being balance. There, but also being the most optimistic person and saying like, there yeah. is another side to this.
For sure.
Like, you will be on the other side, and we will go to Hawaii, and mm-hmm. we will have Christmas. And that is why I'm buying you Christmas presents.
Yeah. yeah.
I think the hardest thing for me when I first started working, because people are like, how do you do it?
Yeah, how do you do
it? I think that like some of the time we have kids that are like feeling good, even though you know, like, get like some of the side effects of chemo, or you've had previous experience with kids with similar diagnoses. I think that giving them their space to express any sort of emotion that they have, if they're happy, if they're sad, you never want to go into a room already down. You right. know what I mean?
Yeah. 'Cause
when I first started, like, I was always so sad. It never gets easy watching kids go through this. It never does. But just going in and kind of like vibing off whatever emotion they have that day is really powerful. Yeah, it just never does. It really doesn't.
No, yeah. How could it?
And you're you're one of those people who I feel like really can sense what people are feeling.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
I hate that about myself too.
That's what makes you so good.
That's what makes you so good.
I don't
want
to know sometimes.
That's what makes
I'm
you
like,
so
oh,
good.
Gosh. Yeah, it's really hard. But thank you so much, Rachel, for coming to sit down with us. Like, you are so strong for me. Be able to sit down and talk to us and talk about your experience. Like, some people after it, like, do not want to have anything to do with talking right. about their story again. So you are incredibly brave. I'm happy to honor you on International Women's
yes.
Day.
Yes.
A legacy, yeah.
I mean, a legacy for your girls, too.
Yeah.
I mean, those two are
so lucky.
They're
to
so
have a
lucky
mama
to have
like
you as their mom.
Yeah, I'm so lucky to have them and you guys. Yeah. No, I know it's hard. It's yeah. a really hard thing. And I think people go through it a lot with their parents, especially.
Yeah.
And people feel so uncomfortable with their parents, like, not being okay. But I think as their kids, we have to, like,
yeah.
Or your friends or whoever, you have to, like, listen to them in those moments. And you're right. Vibe off of whatever they're
yeah.
bringing.
If they're yeah. happy, like, do not go in as a pity party and make them feel worse about yeah. their yeah. chemo treatment. Like, do not do that.
You got to yeah. stand up for them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I think this was an excellent, excellent episode to just, you know, honor Rachel and honor women mm-hmm. and talk about advocating for ourselves on yeah. International Women's Day. Mm-hmm. Because this, you know, specifically breast cancer, that's something that, you know, many women deal with. But that, yeah. I hate to say that's all the time that we have.
That's all the time we have for today. The cry couch is done for now.
But this is not, you know, this is not the end. This doesn't mean this is the only time that we're going to talk about this, because.
No. Yeah, I think we can talk about it again, certainly.
Right.
Yeah.
Because it's something that is, you know, it's a part of who you are. And it's,
yeah.
you know, it's something that I think makes you as
wonderful.
As wonderful and as strong and as just a wonderful friend and excellent person that that you are.
All right. Well, I love you guys.
Well, we love you too. No, we'll have Becky back next week. I'm very sad that she missed this. But thank you all for sitting with us today. Yeah.
Thanks, guys.
Yeah. We had a really, really good time.
Happy Women's Day.
Happy Women's Day. Go out and appreciate yourselves today.
Yeah.
And advocate for yourselves.
Yeah. Yes, please.
In whatever. If your coffee order is wrong, go get it. Go get a different one. And we'll talk to you next time.
Bye. Bye.